This is Akashvani. In the weekly program Current Affairs, under the series Viksit Bharat Ki Taraf Barhte Kadam, now we bring you a discussion on bolstering the nation's infrastructure. The participants are Dr. Kirit S. Parikh, former member, Niti Aayog, Dr. Sharad Kumar, member, Airports Authority of India, and Arjun Chaudhary, anchor.
I'm joined by Dr. Kirit Parikh and Dr. Sharad Kumar. Warm welcome to both our experts on this program, where we will discuss about the 100 days of the third term in office of Honorable Prime Minister Shri Narendra Modi, and the focus on infrastructure, the theme being Sabka Vikas. That's the governance model where 3 lakh crore rupees has been sanctioned for infrastructure development all across the country, across sectors. Let's begin with Dr. Parikh. Sabka Vikas is the Modi governance model in the third term, where 3 lakh crore rupees has been promised as an investment towards infrastructure development. In that, there is a number of announcements made by the central government for the development of roads and ports, for the linkage of ports, rails, airports to villages and tier 1, 2 and 3 cities all across the country. Could you tell us who are the stakeholders who are likely to benefit from this outlay by the central government?
The government in the last 10 years has really developed Indian country's infrastructure in a much faster way and in a very comprehensive way. And I think what they're planning to do in the next 5 years is also very impressive. I think the allocations have been made. Of course, one has to see whether these allocations are fruitfully utilized and the infrastructure comes into being or not. But the record so far in the government has been quite good in sort of reaching the target and making their plans. So I believe this infrastructure development will give a boost to the country's development all around. And hopefully, I think it will also promote our exports. We should have competitive positions in exports. And poor infrastructure has always been in question of not having adequate infrastructure in the system. So I hope that it is possible that the government does indeed implement and make this promise a reality.
So specific to exports and imports, we have the development of the mega port at Vadhavan in Maharashtra. And the outlay is 76,200 crore rupees. So how important is this port for the coastal state of Maharashtra?
I think Vadhavan is a well-known port site, and it would be useful to have a developed mega port there. As you know, there have been lots of small private-run airports have been developed in the Gujarat coast, and they have brought down the turnaround time ports of ships in the country to less than a day. And this has been like 29, 30 days in the years gone by, and that's certainly very useful. And I think Vadhavan would certainly add to this and will make it possible for much larger ships to come because it is a deeper waterway available there. So I think this is good, but I do hope that it doesn't get caught in the standard government-run ports where the turnaround time is not as good as and as competitive as with private ports.
So you see public-private partnership model as part of the governance of Sabka Vikas specific to imports and exports so that there is greater efficiency at the port terminal?
I think it's absolutely critical that this very large mega port that we are developing is operated in the most efficient manner. And if that requires public-private partnership, let it be so, and government should not hesitate from doing that.
So from stakeholders like, you know, MSMEs and corporations that are looking to bring about exports as part of their earnings, what about other stakeholders like citizens who are looking for public goods in the form of better roads and bridges? You have the PMGSY4, the Prime Minister Rural Road Scheme 4, for the construction and upgradation of 62,500 kilometers.
From a large megaport, private citizens don't have to get anything directly, but they get a huge benefit from the fact that countries, industries are developing, jobs are created, that export is booming. If you can do these things, then of course, and imports become easier and cheaper, then certainly the private citizens gain out of it as well.
Absolutely, including the youth seeking employment does lead to industrial development, the industrial corridors being built as well, factory systems there.
Absolutely.
Could you tell us something about the roads and bridges where there's construction and upgradation under this PM Rural Road Scheme 4? And the distance covered is quite vast. It's 62,500 kilometers. And I believe there's also central assistance of 49,000 crore rupees.
Yeah, but you know, rural roads are extremely critical because if you have good road connectivity to urban and trading centers, then the farmers get a better price. And of course, the consumers in rural areas get cheaper products. So rural road connectivity is almost as important as urban road connectivity. So I think giving adequate and extremely important attention to infrastructure is a very good plan, and I hope it succeeds.
Well, it's quite ambitious. They're seeking to link 25,000 villages across the country. How do you see that happening with the geography little uncertain in many areas?
You know, 25,000 villages may seem a very large number, but if you consider that India has 650,000 villages, then you have to put that into perspective. But of course, not all these 25,000 villages, 650,000 villages, are not connected. Many of them are already connected. And maybe these 25,000 are the last 25,000 which need to be connected with good roads. Yes, certainly any improvement in rural road connectivity is extremely desirable.
What about the 8 national high-speed road corridor projects where the length is 936 kilometers?
High-speed corridors are important, but to me, completing the dedicated freight train corridors are more important because highways would consume diesel or something for transport, whereas we need to transfer as much of our infrastructure from certainly long-distance goods movement from road to railways. And for that, the dedicated freight train corridors would be extremely useful because that can run on electricity.
And that's obviously the alternative to road transport, rail transport.
Not that road transport is dedicated, these ultra high speed roads are not important, but they have to be really supplemented with an all round development of these. Because even when you send a lot of traffic by railways, there is still a lot of goods traffic would have to be carried by trucks and so on. And the less time and less cost it takes, it is cheaper for everyone, for the businessmen as well as for the consumers.
So what are the challenges for any contractor whenever they are, say, building a road project versus a rail project? I'm sure the challenges are very different.
I think the most fundamental challenge comes in getting land rights. And I think in this country, you know, it has become a big obstacle in the part of construction of all kinds. So getting the land rights, land acquisition act done quickly becomes a very major thing. Now, if that is done, then the rest can follow very quickly.
So the eminent domain law or the principle is applied here for land acquisition in a sustainable way.
Yeah, unfortunately, everything is challenged in courts. And the courts take forever to resolve many of these things. So one might say that even more important to all this is our reforms of our legal system so that issues are resolved quickly and not forever. You know, that's the reality. Do hope that, you know, they can get the land acquisition done as quickly as possible. And it should not follow in sequence, but should be done simultaneously all over.
These are the challenges in populous regions. But if we get away from these populous regions to more remote regions like Ladakh, and we talked about the Shinkun La Tunnel, which is seeking to connect Ladakh and Himachal Pradesh. What are the challenges there, looking at the geographical terrain?
Any tunneling project is a challenging project, particularly when you're doing in the Himalayan region, where the mountains are young, and you can face all kinds of geological issues that you have not anticipated. But of course, we have had enough now experience in this area. But you certainly need to be very careful and very methodical and systematic in building these tunnels. But in urban areas, one would have thought that it's very difficult to find land and so on. But the way in corridors, you know, metro has developed in Delhi, you can see that, yes, one can find if there is a will, there is a way, and it can be done somehow.
So there are boring machines employed by contractors. What is the process by which a contractor is typically handed a contract to do this kind of work? You need technical expertise and, of course, a labor force which is willing to work under very difficult conditions, because our infrastructure ambitions have only grown from year to year with our GDP going up, gross domestic product, the growth in the economy. But at the same time, there is also a great deal of requirements of skilled labor and, of course, technical expertise to complete these projects.
This is certainly true, but I do believe that we have some first-rate contractors who have executed all kinds of projects, and given an opportunity, they will certainly be able to do that. Of course, they will have to worry about getting the skilled workforce. They will scout around all over the country, maybe all over the world, and get even the international consultants to help them in doing this. Because, you know, in Europe, tunneling has been going on for years, and there was superb expertise in many of these areas. The Austrians, the Swiss, the Italians, they already have huge experience in building tunnels.
Dr. Parekh, to sustain this kind of tender process, what is the type of finance available for this type of allocation for the building of infrastructure projects?
No, I think that is certainly an extremely critical issue. We need finance in the country, not only for this infrastructure, but for, again, mitigation, adaptation for climate change. And getting international finance at a low interest rate, I think, is extremely critical. And to me, the Reserve Bank should lower the interest rate. The finance becomes somewhat cheaper. And I do hope that the international countries, international system, are able to provide the right kind of finance that we need. In some sense, there is no dearth of finance. It is the cost at which finance is given is the critical thing. Now, for that, India's inflation rate has to be controlled, and India's exchange rate has to be controlled. I think we have done reasonably well in this area, and I think we can continue to do so, and that should really be possible to get inflation finance, international finance as well, at a reasonable rate.
Could you tell us about the importance of power and power projects for infrastructure project development as well?
You see, power is a critical input in any kind of equipment. If you want to run a tunnel machine, you need to have power. Anything else that you need, energy. Energy is so critical in all of these things. And power is one of the easiest kind of form of energy to transport over a long distance and to be made available at different places. So I think developing the power sector is very critical. Fortunately, our power sector today is well developed. We have almost, we can boast of surplus power. We are also exporting and trading with our neighbors like Bangladesh, Bhutan and Nepal, and I don't believe that we will have power as a shortage, but making power available, not only just available, but available with adequate sort of stability and frequency control and round the clock becomes very critical. And this is the one challenge that we have to face now in the power sector.
So you mentioning about the challenges of rail projects, especially for freight movement. You mentioned about the dedicated freight corridor. What has been length of rail that's already been put up and the amount of commercial cargo that's moving?
You know, we started this dedicated freight trade corridor project way back in 2005-06. I was a member of the planning commission then, and I think we made allocations almost 2006, if I remember it right. And then, but unfortunately, it is still going on, and largely acquiring land and acquiring rights was the main problem. So I think it is now nearly complete. But once it is done, it can attract a lot more freight transport. Now, one has to recognize that for freight to come on railways instead of trucking, long distance one, you have to really provide the same level of door-to-door service in terms of time and even cost as trucks do. Trucks provide from door-to-door service. Railways have to be able to do something similar. And they can do that if they say we are only loading containers, that containers will be taken by the local people and delivered it. And you run your trains on schedule. So somebody says, I have left my cargo on the railway track here, railway station at 10 a.m. today.
I should be sure that day after tomorrow at 10 a.m. the cargo would be available in Delhi or in Mumbai or whatever city I'm targeting it for. So I think it's not just building railways infrastructure, but really preparing a kind of a system by which you can compete with the trucks.
Well, if you look at the logistics efficiency as a result of all this infrastructure development of road, ports and railways, in 2023, we were ranked 38 out of 139 countries in the Logistics Performance Index of the World Bank. Do you see that improving this calendar year?
No, I think we have now certainly improved a lot and moved up the thing. I don't remember what is the latest ranking position, but it's substantially higher than what it used to be. And I think we can go still better. And I think that will be really critical for our development of trade, export and import, as well as in bringing down prices for the consumers all over the country.
So since we've been talking about rail projects, the announcement has been a 309-kilometer railway line between Manmad in Nashik and Indore, which is at a cost of 18,036 crore rupees. It is supposed to reduce the distance between Mumbai and Indore by 188 kilometers. There are also other metro rail projects with a total cost of 30,766 crore rupees. And then 11 railway projects, which includes 967-kilometer new line and 121-kilometer multi-track, where the approved total cost is 31,133 crore rupees. To what extent do you see the average citizen who have really taken to this kind of rail development in the country?
I think there are two types of development you referred to. One is the metro within urban areas. I mean, of course, the metro in urban areas is extremely beneficial to common men. And as we have seen, the load on the metros in Delhi has increased beyond its very rapidly. So the quick movement and comfortable movement and within time reaching your destination is extremely critical for people and particularly for the middle class and the lower middle class. I believe that corridors which reduce distance between large cities and which increase the speed and reduce the time available to move from one place to the other are in general beneficial to the country.
Joined by Dr. Sharad Kumar, who's a member with the Airports Authority of India. Dr. Sharad Kumar, sir, a warm welcome to you on the program. Dr. Kumar, we would like to begin with civil aviation and the focus of government there. How important is the development of airports for civil aviation progress in the country? What is the allocation by the government for the development of international airports, civil enclaves and airstrips, and how important is this?
If you remember old days, the aviation was for rich and famous, but that is no more a truth now because our honorable Prime Minister has given a verdict, Ude Desh Ka Aam Nagrik, that is called Udan. So now we are connecting hinterland tier 2, tier 3 cities where nobody could think of flight or a aircraft coming over there. So we have a very magnanimous vision by which 2047, that is Amrit Kaal, we are going to have another 250 airports to be built in the country. And you will be glad to know that on 10th of March this year, Honorable Prime Minister has inaugurated 17 airports and another 8 are ready. And we are going to have that soon, where we have made new airports as well as we are doing expansion and modification of the existing airports. As we have to assume the capacity, you might be knowing after COVID, we have already reached the pre-COVID numbers. So the growth is huge. And to meet those demands of our countrymen, we are expanding and we are continuously in our efforts to make new airports, increase the size and capacity of the old airports, extending the runways and modifying the buildings. And there is one thing called reconfiguration. So we are doing one more job, the same terminal buildings, by making some modifications, we are increasing the capacity. So this year, Airport Authority alone has done more than 5,000 crore capex. And put together with the private sector, it's going to be around 10,000 crore. And new airports are coming up to meet the growing demand of our people.
Dr. Sharad Kumar, our Honorable Civil Aviation Minister, Shri K.R. Naidu, also mentioned about a 100-day action plan for the benefit of commuters who would be using airports and buying tickets to travel from tier 1 to tier 2 to tier 3 cities. And this is around the time of World Tourism Day. What is this 100-day action plan for the benefit of India?
Actually, this is very, very prestigious and very, very challenging task which we have taken up. Honorable Minister has focused on two, three things. Number one is the accessibility and number two is the affordability. So we are working day and night for that. And the action plan is to connect more and more towns and cities with the metros. And the second biggest thing is to make more and more hubs in our own country. So we are working on it. As the number of flights increases, the competition will take place. And the prices will come down, that is going to benefit the passengers, as well as you will have more number of flights, so that it will be convenient to you to choose particular timing in the day to catch your flight to suit your requirement. And the cost is going to be very, very close to train fare in some cases, or very, very affordable, like in Udaan scheme, the prices are going to be so less that people will prefer. And you see, not only in general traveling, the airports are very important for meeting the natural disasters. The reinforcement can reach over there. And then medical help, sometimes you need a person to be airlifted for the nearest bigger hospital or something. Now, it generates a lot of employment also. So if you see any other industry, it gives you around 6 times more employment. Everybody gets benefit, like not only airlines, but the other sectors like tourism or hotel industry or the auto rickshaw wala or everybody, like down the line, everybody gets benefit of this growth. So we are working on it. Our minister is dedicating very hard on this mission and we are getting the results also of it. And then the existing airports also, we are increasing the watch hours. We are used to be only day operations. We are going for 24/7 operations so that the airport is available for 24 hours so that optimum utilization of the resources, the infra can be utilized for more number of flights. So all these things we are going to see very soon.
Dr. Sharad Kumar, do tell us something about the announcement of the Lal Bahadur Shastri International Airport in Varanasi, which is another name for Benares. What is the nature of this international airport that is being set up?
Sir, this Varanasi airport is very important to us. Ye sabhi ki aastha ka kendra hai. We are coming up with around 3,000 crore investment, where we are going to increase the length of the runway so that the wide body operations can take place, that is Kodi aircraft. Plus, we are coming with a new terminal building so that the growing demand of the people, the traffic, can be very comfortably handled. And not only in Varanasi, in Baghdogra, in Agra, Beta, Darbhanga, like everywhere, wherever we are witnessing the growth, we are working for the future. For the coming years, to make bigger terminal, bigger runways, and to handle bigger aircraft so that our people can get a convenient flying experience.
Tell us about these civil enclaves. What are these? There is development in Baghdogra in West Bengal and Biheta in Bihar. How is this different and what's unique about it?
Around 38, 39 civil enclaves which we are running. These are the air terminals which are generally with the defense forces, means the runway and the one part of the airport will be under control of the defense, either by Air Force or Army or Navy. And the other side is a civilian enclave where we have our own apron and taxi and our terminal building. So that is a very good concept and maybe a rare concept, because the resources of the country are used for the maximum benefit for the people of the country. So Honorable Prime Minister has emphasized for the optimum utilization of those resources. These are the airports, as you said, Darbhanga and Beta. And not only that, even our Goa airport, Pune airport, you see, even major airports are used by joint user. So as I said, runway and the other infra is with the armed forces and civil enclave is with the Airports Authority of India. We worked in a tender operational system where we use the resources to the optimum, maximize the uses of the infrastructure.
There is also the development of airstrips. You mentioned about how there are already existing infrastructure which is being dual-purposed. What about the airstrips in Agati and Mimikoi in the Lakshadweep Islands? And do tell us something in the context of tourism as well.
Agati is so beautiful. It is nature's paradise. Like nowhere you find such a beautiful place. And now presently we are operating 3 flights. Which are ATR 72 operations or of Alliance Air and Indigo. Now to have Airbus, because which is more economical, and having more capacity. As well, they are more available also. Like these type of aircraft, like Airbus and all, are more easily available compared to ATR worldwide. So we are going to expand the airport at Agati to make compliant to Airbus. Similarly, for Minicoy also, we are going to set up a new airport over there where you can have Airbus operations. And the idea is to make it very economical. See, whenever Airbus operations are there, the cost goes down because the number of seats are more and the expenditure of the airline and other infra is less. So these two places are, you like to visit them and you'll appreciate the efforts being made because they're very challenging projects. And by doing it, our countrymen and the visitors can have a look of the natural beauty and the pristine beauty of those islands.
Dr. Sharad Kumar, you know, for the benefit of our listeners on Akashwani, do tell us what are the actual challenges on the ground, because operate and to create infrastructure for civil aviation, you also require clearance above ground. How does the government manage all that by bringing about regulatory changes and other logistical and operational changes as well?
See, we are a very, very diversified culture, and our country is so big. If you talk about challenges at Leh, that is the highest altitude airport we are having. So those challenges are still more because the altitude makes everything very difficult. And almost for 6 months, the normal road is closed. So their aviation operations are much more important for the people, those who are living nearby. That is the only way of transporting goods and men and material from those areas. That is a different challenge. Now we were talking about Agati, Minicoy and the coastal area. There are different challenges. You have cyclones every 1 year or maybe sometimes twice in a year. So you have to, your infra has to be so robust. Not only civil and electrical infra, even your communication systems and navets have to be so strong, which can withstand those type of calamities. So everywhere you have airports in desert, you have airports in far off places where you really have to see the local conditions and the local requirements, and then you develop an airport which becomes such a big lifeline for the people living around. But there is no much problem with the regulatory things because we are got a template for everything, and our system is so robust. And you'll be happy to note that this month only, ICAO has done huge, very meticulous and very strict audit for our two of the airports, that is Kolkata and Delhi. And we came in flying colors, and they have appreciated our regulatory system in India. And that is how we work. So I must say it is very, very rigid, but that is for the safety and the security of the people who are traveling. So if you follow the template, you meet the compliances, yes, it is easy. You can do it.
We'd like to thank both our experts, Dr. Kirat Parikh, former member of the Planning Commission, now known as Niti Aayog, and Dr. Sharad Kumar, member of the Airports Authority of India, for explaining to us in detail what the announcements and the allocations of the central government has been in its first 100 days in office regarding infrastructure development in India, specifically civil aviation, power, roads, ports, infrastructure development in the country. We'd like to thank both our experts for giving us a detailed explanation of what's happening right now on the ground and what the future lies for infrastructure development for the benefit of all the stakeholders in this country.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
You were listening to a discussion on bolstering the nation's infrastructure. The participants were Dr. Kirat S. Parikh, former member Niti Aayog, Dr. Sharad Kumar, member Airports Authority of India, and Arjun Chaudhary, anchor. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashwani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 9289-094044.